anxiously to the window or to the sun, or inquiring eagerly what o'clock it is, they know that he has admitted the feeling of greediness. If, when they suggest fornication, they find him calmly submitting to the attack of lust, or see him perturbed in body, or at any rate not groaning as he ought under the wantonness of an impure suggestion, they know that the dart of lust is already fixed in his very soul. If they stir up incitements to grief or anger or rage, they can tell whether they have taken root in the heart by the movements of the body. Invisible disturbances, when, for instance, they have noticed him either groaning silently or panting with indignation or changing color, and so they cunningly discover the fault to which he is given over. For they know that every one of us is enticed in a regular way by that one to the incitement of which they see, by a sort of assenting motion of the body, that he has yielded his consent and agreement. And it is no wonder that this is discovered by those powers of the air, when we see that even clever men can often discover the state of the inner man from his mien and look and external bearing. How much more surely, then, can this be discovered by those who, as being of a spiritual nature, are certainly much more subtle and cleverer than men. Chapter 16. An illustration showing how we are taught that unclean spirits know the thoughts of men. For just as some thieves are in the habit of examining the concealed treasures of the men in those houses which they mean to rob, and in the dark shades of night sprinkle with careful hands little grains of sand and discover the hidden treasures which they cannot see by the tinkling sound with which they answer to the fall of the sand, and so arrive at certain knowledge of each thing and metal, which betrays itself in a way by the voice elicited from it. So these two, in order to explore the treasures of our heart, scatter over us the sand of certain evil suggestions, and when they see some bodily affection arise corresponding to their character, they recognize as if by a sort of tinkling sound proceeding from the inmost recesses what it is that is stored up in the secret chamber of the inner man. Chapter 17. On the fact that not every devil has the power of suggesting every passion to men. But we ought to know this, that not all devils can implant all the passions in men, but that certain spirits brood over each sin, and that some gloat over uncleanness and filthy lusts, others over blasphemy, others are more particularly devoted to anger and wrath, others thrive on gloominess, others are pacified with vainglory and pride, and each one implants in the hearts of men that sin in which he himself revels, and they cannot implant their special vices all at one time, but in turn, according as the opportunity of time or place or a man who is open to their suggestions excites them. Chapter 18. A question whether among the devils there is any order observed in the attack or system in its changes. Germanus. Must we then believe that wickedness is arranged and, so to speak, systematized among them in such a way that there is some order in the changes observed by them, and a regular plan of attack carried out, though it is clear that method and system can only exist among good and upright men. As Scripture says, Thou shalt seek wisdom among the ungodly, and shalt not find it. And our enemies are senseless. And this, there is neither wisdom nor courage nor counsel among the ungodly. 395. Chapter 19. The answer how far an agreement exists among devils about the attack and its changes. Serenus. It is a true assertion that there is no lasting concord among bad men, and that perfect harmony cannot exist even in regard to those particular faults which have attractions for them all in common. For as you have said, it can never be that system and discipline are preserved among undisciplined things. But in some matters where community of interest and necessity enforces it, or participation in some gain recommends it, they must arrange for some agreement for the time being. And we see very clearly that this is so in the case of this war of spiritual wickedness, so that not only do they observe times and changes among themselves, but actually are known specially to occupy some particular spots and to haunt them persistently. For since they must make their attacks through certain fixed temptations and well-defined sins, and at particular times, we clearly infer from this that no one can at one and at the same time be deluded by the emptiness of vainglory and inflamed by the lust of fornication, nor at one and the same time be puffed up by the outrageous haughtiness of spiritual pride and subject to the humiliation of carnal gluttony. Nor can anyone be overcome by silly giggling and laughter, and at the same time be excited by the stings of anger, or at any rate filled with pains of gnawing grief. But all the spirits must one by one advance to attack the soul, in such a way that when one has been vanquished and retreated, he must make way for another spirit to attack it still more vehemently. Or if he has come forth victorious, he will nonetheless hand it over to be deceived by another. Chapter 20. Of the fact that opposite powers are not of the same boldness, and that the occasions of temptation are not under their control. We ought also not to be ignorant of this, that they have not all the same fierceness and energy, nor indeed the same boldness and malice, and that with beginners and feeble folk only the weaker spirits join battle. And when these spiritual wickednesses are beaten, then gradually the assaults of stronger ones are made against the athlete of Christ. For in proportion to a man's strength and progress is the difficulty of the struggle made greater, for none of the saints could possibly be equal to the endurance of the malice of so many and so great foes, or meet their attacks, or even bear their cruelty and savagery, were it not that the merciful judge of our contest and president of the games, Christ himself, equalized the strength of the combatants, and repelled and checked their excessive attacks, and made with the temptation a way of escape as well, that we might be able to bear it. 396. Chapter 21. Of the fact that devils struggle with men not without effort on their part. But our belief is that they undertake this struggle not without effort on their part. For in their conflict they themselves have some sort of anxiety and depression, and especially when they are matched with stronger rivals, i.e. saints and perfect men. Otherwise, no contest or struggle, but only a simple deception of men, and one free from anxiety on their part, would be assigned to them. And how, then, would the apostle's words stand, where he says, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against world rulers of this darkness, against spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. And this too, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. And again, I have fought a good fight." 397. For where it is spoken of as a fight and conflict and battle, there must be effort and exertion and anxiety on both sides. And equally there must either be in store for them chagrin and confusion for their failure, or delight consequent upon their victory. But where one fights with ease and security against another who struggles with great effort, and in order to overthrow his rival makes use of his will alone as his strength, there it ought not to be called a battle, struggle, or strife, but a sort of unfair and unreasonable assault and attack. But they certainly have to labor, and when they attack men, exert themselves in no lesser degree in order to secure from each one that victory which they want to obtain. And there is hurled back upon them the same confusion which was awaiting us had we been worsted by them, as it is said, "The head of their compassing me about, the labor of their own lips shall overwhelm them, and his sorrow shall be turned on his own head." And again, "Let the snare which he knoweth not come upon him, and let the net which he hath hidden catch him, and into that very snare let him fall." 398. Viz., that which he contrived for the deception of men. They then themselves also come to grief, and as they damage us, so are they also in like manner damaged by us. Nor when they are worsted do they depart without confusion. And seeing these defeats of theirs and their struggles, one who had good eyes in his inner man, seeing also that they gloated over the downfall and mischances of individuals, and fearing lest his own case might furnish them with this kind of delight, prayed to the Lord, saying, "Lighten mine eyes that I sleep not in death, lest mine enemies say, I have prevailed against him. They that trouble me will rejoice if I be moved. and, O my God, let them not rejoice over me. Let them not say in their hearts, Aha, aha, our very wish. Neither let them say we have devoured. And they gnash their teeth upon me. Lord, how long wilt thou look on this? For he lieth in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lieth in wait to ravish the poor. And he seeketh from God his meat. 399. And again, when all their efforts were exhausted and they have failed to secure our deception, they must be confounded and blush at the failure of their efforts, who seek our souls to destroy them, and let them be covered with shame and confusion who imagine evil against us. 400. Jeremiah also says, Let them be confounded, and let not me be confounded. Let them be afraid, and let not me be afraid. Bring upon them the fury of thy wrath, and with a double destruction destroy them. 401. For no one can doubt that when they are vanquished by us, they will be destroyed with a double destruction first. Because, while men are seeking after holiness, they, though they possessed it, lost it, and became the cause of man's ruin. Secondly, because, being spiritual existences, they have been vanquished by carnal and earthly ones. Each one, then, of the saints, when he looks on the destruction of his foes and his own triumphs, exclaims with delight, I will follow after mine enemies and overtake them. I will not turn until they are destroyed. I will break them, and they shall not be able to stand. They shall fall under my feet. 402. And in his prayers against them, the same prophet says, Judge thou, O Lord, them that wrong me. Overthrow them that fight against me. Take hold of arms and shield, and rise up to help me. Bring out the sword, and shut up the way against them that persecute me. Say to my soul, I am thy salvation. 403. And when, by subduing and destroying all our passions, we have vanquished these, we shall then be permitted to hear those words of blessing. Thy hand shall be exalted over thine enemies, and all thine enemies shall perish. 404. And so when we read or chant all these and such like passages found in Holy Writ, unless we take them as written against those spiritual wickednesses which lie in wait for us night and day, we shall not only fail to draw from them any edification to make us gentle and patient, but shall actually meet with some dreadful consequence, and one that is quite contrary to evangelical perfection. For we shall not only not be taught to pray for or to love our enemies, but actually shall be stirred up to hate them with an implacable hatred, and to curse them, and incessantly to pour forth prayers against them. And it is terribly wrong and blasphemous to think that these words were uttered in such a spirit by holy men and friends of God, on whom before the coming of Christ the law was not imposed for the very reason that they went beyond its commands, and chose rather to obey the precepts of the gospel and to aim at apostolical perfection, though they lived before the dispensation of the time. Chapter 22. On the fact that the power to hurt does not depend upon the will of the devils. But that they have not the power of hurting any man is shown in a very clear way by the instance of the blessed Job, where the enemy did not venture to try him beyond what was allowed to him by the divine permission, and it is evidenced by the confession of the same spirits contained in the records of the Gospels, where they say, If thou cast us out, suffer us to go into the herd of swine. 405. And far more must we hold that they cannot of their own free will enter into any one of men who are created in the image of God, if they have not power to enter into dumb and unclean animals without the permission of God. But no one, I will not say of the younger men, whom we see living most steadfastly in this desert, but even of those who are perfect, could live alone in the desert, surrounded by such swarms of foes of this kind, if they had unlimited power and freedom to hurt and tempt us. And still more clearly is this supported by the words of our Lord and Savior, which in the lowliness of the manhood he had assumed, he uttered to Pilate when he said, Thou couldst have no power against me at all, unless it were given thee from above. 406. Chapter 23 of the Diminished Power of the Devils. But we have thoroughly discovered, both by our own experience and by the testimony of the elders, that the devils have not now the same power as they had formerly during the early days of the Anchorites. when yet there were only a few monks living in the desert. For such was their fierceness that it was with difficulty that a few very steadfast men and those advanced in years were able to endure a life of solitude. Since in the actual monasteries where 8 or 10 men used to live, their violence attacked them so, and their assaults were experienced so frequently and so visibly, that they did not dare all go to bed at once by night, but took turns, and while some snatched a little sleep, others kept watch and devoted themselves to psalms and prayer and reading. And when the wants of nature compelled them to sleep, they awoke the others and committed to them in like manner the duty of keeping watch over those who were going to bed. Whence we cannot doubt that one or two things has brought about this result, not only in the case of us who seem to be fairly strong from the experience which our age gives us, but also in the case of younger men as well. For either the malice of the devils has been beaten back by the power of the cross penetrating even to the desert, and by its grace which shines everywhere, or else our carelessness makes them relax something of their first onslaught, as they scorn to attack us with the same energy with which they formerly rage against those most admirable soldiers of Christ. And by this deceit and ceasing from open attacks, they do us still more damage. For we see that some have fallen into so sluggish a condition that they have to be coaxed by too gentle exhortations for fear, lest they should forsake their cells and fall into more dangerous troubles, and wander and stray about and be entangled in what I would call grosser sins. And it is thought that a great thing is got from them if they can even with some listlessness remain in the desert. And the elders often say to them as a great relief, stop in your cells and eat and drink and sleep as much as you like, 407, if only you will stay in them always. Chapter 24. Of the way in which the devils prepare for themselves an entrance into the bodies of those whom they are going to possess. It is clear, then, that unclean spirits cannot make their way into those whose bodies they are going to seize upon in any other way than by first taking possession of their minds and thoughts. And when they have robbed them of fear and their recollection of God and spiritual meditation, they boldly advance upon them, as if they were dispossessed of all protection and divine safeguard, and could easily be bound and then take up their dwelling in them, as if in a possession given over to them. Chapter 25. On the fact that those men are more wretched who are possessed by sins than those who are possessed by devils. Although it is a fact that those men are more grievously and severely troubled who, while they seem to be very little affected by them in the body, are yet possessed in spirit in a far worse way, as they are entangled in their sins and lusts. For as the Apostle says, of whom a man is overcome, of him he is also the servant. Only that in this respect they are more dangerously ill, because though they are their slaves, yet they do not know that they are assaulted by them and under their dominion. But we know that even saintly men have been given over in the flesh to Satan and to great afflictions for some very slight faults, since the divine mercy will not suffer the very least spot or stain to be found in them on the day of judgment, and purges away in this world every spot of their filth, as the prophet, or rather God himself, says, in order that he may commit them to eternity as gold or silver, refined and needing no penal purification. And, says he, I will clean purge away thy dross, and I will take away all thy tin. And after this thou shalt be called the city of the just, a faithful city. And again, like as silver and gold are tried in the furnace, so the Lord chooseth the heart. And again, the fire tries gold and silver, but man is tried in the furnace of humiliation. And this also, for whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. 408. Chapter 20.